Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Our learning is on. It is I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Lisa Nagayi.
Yeah, you've been saying that. You've probably said it about 9 times since I got here.
Lisa Nagayi.
What does it mean?
That's what you're doing too.
Ew, look at your fingers.
I reject you not saying doing too. I reject
it. It just came out.
It just came out. It was the first weekend. It was out Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Guess what? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I've been sick. Like, I cannot shake whatever this is.
You weren't too sick Friday night when you were...
That was Thursday?
Thursday. I'm so glad I got my own. I ain't worried about Josephine. You talking about how sick you are.
I am you so glad sick. You brought that up.
You talking about how sick you are.
That's what kickstarted
it. You weren't sick when you were bouncing around bunny hopping.
Here's the thing. Okay, Van and I went to what I was calling a block party on the rooftop. It was very fun. Issa Rae's Hooray Party. I was so happy Van came out because it's hard to get you to come out, stuff like that. They're playing a lot of Texas, Louisiana music. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It felt like college. But what I learned and realized, they started playing, they're playing the Before I Let Go, the old school, Into the New School, Beyonce. Man, what is going on? You're like a child. You messed all over yourself. Is it water?
Yeah, because.
Just wipe it on your shirt.
No, this is actively black.
And?
I don't want to ruin my actively black gear.
It's water. It's workout clothes. You could just wipe it
off.
You could just wipe
my actively black. I will wear this to the Oscars.
That's actually a really nice sweatshirt.
I tell you guys right now.
If you're not getting some gear,
if you're not wearing actively black, you're playing yourself. Is it like the paper towel or something?
There's a Kleenex box right there you could have used.
But you don't want to use Kleenex. You want to use a paper towel. Like a Kleenex is going to get all over. You know what I mean? Anyway, I'm sorry.
Literally, you could do this. Okay, so Beyonce.
Shout out to Lainey. Shout out to Actively Black. Literally the best athleisure stuff you can wear. It's the best. It's literally the best. Like, if you're not wearing it, it's because you have a problem with black. Because this is literally the best stuff you can wear. It looks the best. It feels the best. I'm not even joking when I tell you there's no brand out there. No brand that makes better looking stuff, that makes better feeling stuff. I get nothing from them. I get no money. I don't even get the drops anymore. But I tell you what I do is wear all of this stuff.
You get
all
free
the time.
Stuff.
Nah, I haven't gotten in a lot. It's tough.
That's a nice sweatshirt though.
Lainey's going mainstream, man. Lainey is he had the big fashion show. You know what I mean? Like Actively Black is the greatest brand. It's the best brand.
I would love to wear Actively Black.
Nah, you wouldn't want to wear it. But go ahead, get back to you. You're talking about Beyonce.
Okay, so Beyonce,
thank you.
They're playing Before I Let Go. Mm-hmm. And everybody, they break out quite naturally, as black people do, mm-hmm. into an electric slide.
Yeah.
Which I then said, Van, come on, everybody's doing it. And you didn't do it.
Don't.
And what I learned, you don't know how.
I wouldn't say I don't know how.
I learned you don't know how to do the electric slide.
So this is what I would say. And this goes way back. This is a very funny thing. I wouldn't say I don't know how. I would say, number one, I don't like it.
Because?
There's too much thinking involved.
Oh my gosh. No, it's not. It comes
don't
naturally.
Like it. Don't like
I know you don't know how to do it.
This has nothing. Yeah, there's no problem. This is well known amongst my friends that the electric slide.
Not to Thought Warriors.
Like, this is well known. Like, when we were on All of Us Together, Gino would point out the electric slide. I'm not that type of dancer.
What kind of dancer are you?
I'm a dancer that just has to feel the dance. The Josephine Johnny, Chopper style, all of these things. You know what I mean? When everybody's dancing together, my anxiety doesn't let me do the electric slide. Well, I don't feel too much pressure.
So you're not good online. Like, so that's why you didn't join the bunny hop.
I don't. And the bunny hop to me is so fucking intricate. You and your whole girl.
What?
To me,
that's
the bunny.
Easier than the electric slide.
To me, the bunny hop is so intricate. All of these dances, I'm telling you, if I'm a good dancer, I do not electric slide, I do not bunny hop. Any dance that, now we have player-proof dances that we do.
I gotta see one.
Oh, we have player-proof dances.
Just show me one.
I'm not gonna show you, I gotta meet the rest of the crew.
Why? Can't you do it by yourself? Represent.
I'm not representing.
Represent for the crew.
Yeah, we have dances that we do, and I could do the dances of my service fraternity.
the your service fraternity has dances?
Oh yeah, we had U5U had Upsilon, Phi Upsilon.
Like y'all stroll?
Yeah, we had a couple of strolls.
How have we? We've talked about Delta Sigma Theta. We've talked about Mu Phi Mu.
Mu Phi Mu.
You have are in a service fraternity that has a stroll and you don't do it. Is it okay? Just tell me this because I know I'm not going to get you to. You won't do it.
Yeah.
Is it closer to what Q's, Alphas, Kappas, or Sigmas do?
So here's the thing about U5U is it was started by a bunch of dancers. These guys could really dance. Jermaine and the Magnificent Seven were the girls. I forgot all the information. The name of the guys that started it, the first line. I can't remember what they're called now. The
first line.
Yeah, started like 1990. And I found it, me and Ryan found it, the U5U chapter at Louisiana Tech. We found it, the chapter.
So what is
and your... We ended up becoming at one time...
What are your colors?
The biggest, black, red, and white. We ended up becoming the biggest black frat at Tech at one point.
That's amazing. So explain to me what your stroll is close to. Oh, y'all got a sign?
Yeah.
You have a sign?
Yeah, U5U.
About
why are you throwing our shit up? Don't throw our shit up. You fly you.
Do you have a corresponding lady fraternity?
Yep.
I mean sorority?
Uh-huh.
What is it?
Omega Tau Pi. QT Pi. It's true. Omega Tau Pi. QT Pies. I remember. Hold on for a second. I remember. I was talking to this Q at Tech, right? I was talking to this Q at Tech, and he was like, yeah, bro, I seen y'all got y'all little fraternity, whatever. I'm like, come on, man, don't, because it started with my brothers or whatever. See, and he was like, and I see y'all got the girls now, because we started Omega Tau Pi there, too. Some girls came up, and they started it there, too. And he was like, yeah, they cutie pies. See, that's the problem I got with some of this other stuff. He was like, well, I was like, what? He was like, what's so cute about it? I was like, what? He's like, ain't none of this shit cute. This is black history we talking about. I was, all right, man. Me and Ryan had a little dalliance with it. And then the deeper we got into it, the more serious we realized people took it. Mm-hmm. And the stupider it became to us. Not you. First of all, I will say this.
Service organization.
I love U5U and all of my brothers in U5U and all of that. What I'm talking about is the deep, deep culture. I mean, it ended up being some beefs at Tech behind it. Ended up being all of this to where, you know, we was going back and forth like shit had to go down. It was like, it was all too much is all I'm saying. It's all too much. I love all my sisters in it. My sister got me
She's
started.
She's a cutie pie.
She's a cutie pie. And then a lot of cutie pies and U5U people went on to become different Divine Nine fraternities.
So please again tell me what is your stroll closest to? Which frat? So I can envision. I don't know.
But what I'm saying is they were dancers. They were dancers.
So?
So they made up stuff that was like their own.
But like, were they hopping? Was it more of a like a smooth stroll?
There was no hopping. I would say it was probably more like a smooth stroll.
Okay, so campus.
But it was the whole organization to me is honestly Sigma Zeta coded.
Oh, okay.
The whole organization to me. You made a face. The whole organization. You did.
Don't do that.
You did. We know. You know what? We know how y'all feel about
them. I dated a Sigma.
Yeah, we know how y'all feel about them. But you made a face. When really, they're probably the most cohesive out of all of them.
I believe that. That's actually very true.
Yeah, like they you know, it's probably the whole thing, but you made a face. But yeah, it was fun. But like, I remember it wasn't the bunny hop. We went to Memphis and there was another one that came out and like we got up, we were all in Memphis. Maybe it was the Cha-Cha Slide. I can't remember which one it was.
It was so easy.
But I was there with Gino and I remember, I said it right there. Gino will remember this. I was like, I'll never participate again.
Because you tried and failed?
It's not that I tried and failed. I don't like it. I literally get nervous. I get nervous in situations like that. I feel like you gotta dance and do the same thing everybody else is doing. It like if you fuck it up, it's a big deal. When I'm feeling the music, I can do whatever I want. I'm a solo dancer by myself. And even when we would have like the U5U stuff and everybody would get together and do all this, I don't want to do it. I like to get on my own. Yeah, but that's true. Sylvia saw that. Shout out to Sylvia. Sylvia's like, man, I'm gonna tape this. I'm gonna put this out. And I told her, I was like, do it. Shout out to Sylvia Bell. I told her, do it, tape it, put it out. Cause I'm ready to have a conversation about all of this necessity of electric sliding. You don't have to electric slide.
You don't have to. I think what caught me is, I know you've said multiple times how good of a dancer you are.
I'm a great dancer.
And I was shocked that you couldn't do it because it is.
You keep saying I can't do it.
You said you can't
do
it.
What I'm saying is I don't like to do it. No, I mean, could I do the dance? Yes.
The floor is yours.
Boom, boom, boom. I'm about to do
it. Can
the
we get a little music?
Look, I want the original music though.
Doing the electric slide.
Boogie. But no, it was fun. But I noticed that you weren't sick during that.
I was. I was. I had whiskey because I was trying to like fix it. And then I was fine. I rested Friday. But then I went to a dinner Friday. And that just, I should have stayed home. So I was in the bed.
See, so stop fucking talking about I was all in the of bed this. All you out in these streets.
No, I was in these streets. But I was in the bed all day Saturday. Didn't do a thing. And then Sunday, I felt a little better. So I started to be more productive. I had quite a productive day. Really, really, really good weekend.
So you have until next Thursday's podcast to see Dune 2. And I'm going to give you a Dune 2 quiz.
No.
You're holding me accountable for the electric slide, which
you have to do it.
I accept.
So if I, okay, all right.
That's what we'll do.
So the next time we're in person, I will have had to see Dune 2 and you will have to do.
5 questions on Dune 2.
And I'm going to ask Alika if she catches you practicing.
Right. I'm going to do the electric slide. I'm going to do it.
I'm going to ask her if she catches you practicing.
By the way, if I had to do it by myself, I'd probably be fine. But if I'm doing it, it's not enough space.
This is where you'll be doing it that day.
I know. We'll figure it out. We'll do it right here. If I do it by myself, it'll be fine. If you jump in and start doing it with me, I'm going to be like, I'm going to start freaking out.
You know what I think gets you? Because there's a basic way to do it. And, you know, some people start like adding their own things, especially on the middle. And then that
starts fucking with me. Gino is like such a kappa to where.
I get that from him.
And so like everything has a shimmy in it.
Yeah.
It's so annoying. Like everything has a
I can see that from Gino.
And so we're doing the electric slide. I'm like, yo, you fucking me up, bruh. You fucking me up. But Gino would be pointing out the ways, going all the things, like trying to talk to girls and all of that stuff, doing the electric slide. He loves it. He's a big electric slider. Nobody else was that big of an electric slider in our crew except for Gino. He loved it. Like to do it 2, 3, 4 times, the club would be over.
That's the only thing that slide. I hate is it goes on too long.
Yeah.
Like at some point, we got to stop.
Yeah. It's really kind of overrated in a way.
No, it's fun when it starts.
You and your friend were the only, what's her name again?
Jade.
You and Jade made a new friend that night. It was very impressive.
No, don't do Jade like that. No, she didn't.
Yeah, she did, man. Jay was made a friend with one of the most prominent actors on Insecure. It's amazing. You guys were doing the bunny hop by yourselves.
It's just us.
For attention.
No, because the song was playing. And we loved it. Yeah. It reminds us of college. And nobody else at the party seemed to know it. And right. The only other person was you and you wouldn't join. So
I thought
people would join in because it's such an easy dance.
No, that shit is complicated to me. Let me tell you something. Seriously.
Got 4 moves.
All jokes aside, we had a fun time.
We really did have a fun time. It was good. It was worth it. See, you got to come out more.
Nah. I could have slept. I've been tired. I've been so tired. My voice is all scratchy. I could have slept. I've been so tired. Could have hung out with Bozeman. Like, you understand how great it is. I mean, you do. Like, hanging out with Bozeman.
Yeah. No, I get it.
And Bozeman woke up this morning. Bozeman came over. I was like, hey, you want to go outside? He's like, not quite yet, Dad. Let's just hang out for a second. I literally had my phone up and I was playing the video and the video was loud. And I swear to you, Bozeman went and put his paw on the phone.
I believe it. Bozeman's a really smart guy.
Like, put that down. It's our time. Lizan Al-Ghaib, next week. Lizan Al-Ghaib.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner, to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
So I'm gonna talk about something that happened yesterday at another screening of Dune I went to. I've seen Dune twice, three times. I'm gonna tell you about another screen. You guys, I want you guys to tell me the name of this segment is Van Wrong.
Love this segment.
All right, this is the name of this segment, is Van Wrong.
Let's go.
Okay, so group of us went to go see Dune yesterday. Otto set it up over at the City Walk. Okay, so we're there, we're excited to see Dune. If you guys can't go get to see a movie at the City Walk in IMAX, you should. They have true IMAX there. Biggest fucking screen I've ever seen. Hmm. All right, all the way, huge screen.
City Center.
City Walk.
Oh, Universal?
Universal City Walk.
Oh, okay.
So the only bad thing about it is it's theme park parking. So you have to pay like...
It's not that bad, though.
You have to pay like $32 to park.
What?
Yeah. But then you get the money back.
Don't they? Yeah, they validate, right?
They validate and you get the money back. It's theme park parking. So everybody's there. It's excited. Gigantic auditorium. Huge screen. True IMAX. 70 millimeter. We saw the movie. It's fantastic. So we're talking a little bit. Nicole Kidman comes on. I always got to give Nicole Kidman her props.
They're ending that.
Are they?
Yeah, they announced that.
Looks like they just put out a new one, but whatever. So she's doing her thing. And the movie comes on. The movie isn't really on yet.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil anything about Dune, but they say something and then it goes to the Warner Brothers thing. Let you know it's a big Warner Brothers movie or whatever. I mean, we're still talking. The movie's not on yet. We're still going back and forth. We're very excited, whatever, whatever. And behind us, somebody goes, shh, stop talking. Now, why do? Now, I thought this was a joke. So I turn around like, ha, 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 ha. And I look on his face. And when I look back at Otto, shout out to my friend Otto. When I look back at Otto, Otto's like, I'm like, he's got to be playing. And Otto's like, he wasn't. And so I'm like, okay, cool. And
how old is this guy?
The guy that said this?
Yeah.
Probably in his 20s, early
30s. Oh, young. Okay. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting older.
Hat. So.
Red?
Huh? Red mustache?
Hat.
No, hat wasn't. So it's him and a couple of his friends. And apparently this is a big cinephile movie theater because it's the only place you see the movie in the pure IMAX, one of the biggest screens. I don't know if it's the only place, but it's one of the biggest screens, 70 millimeter, all that stuff. So I'm like, so now it's getting funny to me because he's actually mad, right?
He only said it once.
He only said it once.
Yeah.
It's funny to me, but he said, shh, stop talking. Mm. And then I look at Otto and Otto's pissed. I'm like, yo, you mad? And he's like, yeah. I was like, oh, we just say something after the movie. And he's like, yeah, we definitely are. I'm like, cool. So I was really looking at all of this as a big joke.
Mm-hmm.
Until I turned over and looked back at the guy and he ice grilled me. He was like, and I was like, oh. I was like, oh, okay. So then I went to a little zone. And so it's about 10 or 15 minutes of me being really upset. Then the movie gets to you. Because it's still at the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
Then the movie gets to you. And what starts to happen is, because I've seen the movie a couple times, you start to realize that you're coming towards the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The movie ends. I'm not going to ruin it for you because you're going to watch it next Sunday.
I am going to
The Dune. It. This is called... Let's not even go for the electric slide. Let's go for the bunny hop because that's the more complicated one. This is going to be called the Dune Bunny Hop Challenge.
Okay.
Next Thursday. The Dune... I'm up for it. I'm going to do it.
You're going to do the bunny hop?
I'm going to do the bunny hop. The bunny hop is one I've never successfully completed.
Okay.
But I know I can do it. The Dune Bunny Hop Challenge next week. Okay. So anyway. So we get up. We pass by. And I looked at the dude. They're still sitting down, the guys behind us, because... They're cinephile bros. They're watching the credits. So I look at them and I say, yo, my man want to say something to you real quick. And Otto looks over and Otto's like, yo, the movie wasn't even on yet. And because it wasn't. It really wasn't. The movie wasn't even on yet. And you shushed me like a little fucking kid. And the guy goes, yeah, I appreciate you not talking for the rest of the movie. And I'm like, oh, this nigga playing. And he's him and Otto are going back and forth. And I'm like, but, and then I reverted straight up. I was like, but you see how that could get you fucked up? And he was like, oh, come on, man. It's not that serious. I'm like, no. Like, just think about it, though. Like, what if I had decided to grab you by your head and drag you around this motherfucking movie theater? Mm-hmm. And so everybody else, so now people are starting to get uncomfortable. One of his friends reaches out his hand to shake his hand. I'm like, yeah, good. We good. I mean, that's not going to happen. But, like, the movie wasn't on. He's like, come on, you guys are talking into the movie. I'm like, we weren't, though. We really weren't. I see movies all the time. I don't talk during the movie. I'm like, we weren't talking. I was like, but that thing, saying that and projecting like that when I'm sitting right in front of you, I'm letting you know I'm stalling you out. It's mad people that would have turned around and been like, yo, what the fuck is up? Like, what you trying to do? I'm like, I'm not one of those guys. I'm just trying to...
Next time you're going to get the wrong person.
Next time you're going to get the wrong person. And he's like, and he said it again. And he was like, yeah, man, I really appreciate, I really apologize. I wasn't trying to do that. I'm like, okay, good. Y'all have a good Sunday. And then he goes, but I really do appreciate you guys not talking for the rest of the movie. And then I lost it. I was like, don't fucking say that to me again. And if you want to say that to me again, I'm going to come around there. I'm going to grab you. And we're going to see how dope your niggas are. Because it's six of y'all and it's two of us. And I guarantee you this whole... And by this point, I'm going off doing the same shit that I always did as a kid, right? The same Baton Rouge shit. And then a deep sense of embarrassment washes over me. Because what didn't happen in my youth is that midway in doing this, I snapped out of it. Mm. And when I snapped out of it, I started to look.
And people recognize you?
I don't know if they recognize me or not, but the faces of uncomfort, fear, what is he gonna do? What the fuck is going on around there? Like, this is a big thing. So I'm looking around. I looked, I kind of paused and I went, you know what? Y'all have a good Sunday.
Their faces are people watching.
Their faces, like his boy next to him was fucking panicking. Like, and also these, it started to kind of dawn on me that these were kids. These guys might have been 30 years old. We're talking probably between 27 and 32. So, and I don't know where they come from or whatever, but I absolutely felt bad. Like I felt, cause by this point I fully lost it. I don't know if he was trying to play with me. There's almost no way he wasn't trying to play with me. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he was just so blissfully socially inept that he wouldn't understand that the way that I took that as him saying, but you shut up though. Which we really didn't. We were going to stop talking when the movie came on anyway. Like, I was taking that as a challenge. There's so much trauma here. I was taking that as a challenge, but I appreciate the fact that you did shut up. I'm like, nobody shut up because I'm like, stop saying that. You make the more you making me feel played, the more my ego is telling me I don't have to do anything that you say to do. And if I want to, I can hurt you. Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm
still, this is trauma.
Literally, yeah. A part of me is like, you know what? Just step into the aisle and wait for him to come out of the aisle and just see what's up. And then my brain goes right into it. Now my brain is thinking about how you get the drop. Okay, grab him and throw him down the aisle real quick and then boom, boom, boom. Like, okay. Okay. My brain is like playing all of the things. Like, then it's this thing, okay, cool. Well, this is what is Otto gonna do? Me and Otto never been in this situation before. And when I'm walking out of the theater, there is so much shame. Like, I'm like, fuck. How the fuck at 43 am I still embarrassing myself like this? Like, how is that flash out gene?
43?
Yeah.
Sorry, keep going. Oh, please. At least I didn't do you like Kevin Hart did, Tachi.
That's exactly what you just did. That's exactly what you just did. That's exactly what you just did.
In my mind, I thought you were estimating because you're about to have a birthday And I'm like, no way he's about to turn 44.
That birthday's 44.
No way he's about to turn 44. That's what I was thinking. You look so young.
I am young.
Shh. Okay, to answer the question, mm-hmm. Is Van wrong? You know you're wrong. That's why you had shame when you walked out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from a person who's, I am confrontational. If I had been in that situation and somebody had shushed me, I would have turned around and been like, the movie hasn't even fucking started yet. Shh. Mm-hmm. Now you're talking. Like, yeah. I would have said something back in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
Right.
If it had kept going, it would have been an issue.
Yeah.
But if I had let a whole movie go by, I would have probably been annoyed the first 30 minutes, and then I would have just let it go.
But I wasn't, I was never mad. I took it as, like, because everybody was, actually, a lot of people were talking, the Nicole Kidman thing always gets people going. I wasn't mad. I wasn't mad till I turned around and
you saw
looked,
his face.
And I looked at I saw his face and he had the ice grill situation on.
Yes.
And now I'm like, nah,
I,
man.
I still would, even your conversation, your initial conversation, even you saying, but you see how you could take it. I didn't think that was bad. Y'all talked after, the friend sticks out his hand trying to do an olive branch. Y'all,
I shook his hand.
You know, I know. All that was fine. You even saying like, I'm letting you know where I was coming from it and kind of like, you say that to somebody else,
mm-hmm.
It could be a real issue. So maybe this is a learning thing for you.
Right.
I get all of that. The moment when he said, but I appreciate you being quiet, I think in his mind, he thought that was something nice to say, like, but I really do appreciate, like, we're having this back and forth. In his mind, I think he was like, thanks for not doing this in the theater. I really do appreciate you being quiet. I understand how you took it. It's almost condescending, like, but like, you shut the fuck up. But thanks. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. But I also understand, could understand it. Who knows how he meant it? But mm-hmm. I could understand how he was like, but I really do appreciate, hey, but like, thanks for being quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And it should have ended with y'all having that conversation right there. But yeah, it went too far and you recognized it, which is why you pulled yourself out of it. And like, cause
Otto was ready to go too.
That could have gone so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know who could have been there. Security. Police officer, off-duty cop, something, you know what I mean? Like, and even though there were less of you, it's still black and white, and they could have panicked, people carry guns.
People carry guns?
Do they not?
I'm not
Do they not?
I mean, I guess they do, but I you're not going.
I'm just saying, mm-hmm. So many things escalate so quickly and go wrong and are misinterpreted, right. And I just, as you kept telling the story and it kept getting bigger, I thought this could be so wrong.
Yeah, for nothing. You know, all
yeah.
for ego.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And for, so, you know, whatever.
You were wrong.
Let's get a vote. Was I wrong, Alea? Well,
Alea was working.
I was Ashley?
No, I hate when people shush me in movie theaters. So, I don't think so.
There you go. Ashley smashed about that
bullshit. You would, yeah, I guess she would have been smashly.
I would have been smashly immediately.
I bet you won't shush me again. I'm gonna start shushing the hell out of you.
All right. Supreme Court has ruled on the whole Donald Trump insurrection mess. Let's get into it. All right. There's really no big deal of the day. I guess this is something to talk about.
Breaking news, right?
Supreme Court on Monday handed a sweeping win to former President Donald Trump by ruling that states cannot kick him off of the ballot over his actions leading up to the January 6th attack on the Capitol. You guys know this in Colorado, and I think a couple of other states had tried it. Yeah.
They're waiting for this ruling.
Right. Had used the 14th Amendment of the Constitution to disqualify Trump from being on the ballot in those respective states. Now, the way the words is in the 14th Amendment, there's a language that prohibits insurrectionists from being eligible for offices like the president. And the way the Colorado courts interpreted this is that Trump is an insurrectionist because of his actions on January 6th, and therefore he cannot be the president. He's not eligible to be the president. And there was some
the Supreme Court of Colorado.
Supreme Court of Colorado. There was some talk about this as a legal theory prior to them doing it. Then they did it, which made it a reality to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
The case got all the way up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court, which has a heavy conservative majority, as you guys know, some of these people were directly appointed by Donald Trump, has ruled that doesn't hold any legal water. It says, because the Constitution makes Congress, rather than the states, responsible for enforcing Section 3 of all federal office holders, because the Constitution makes Congress, rather than the states, responsible for enforcing Section 3 against all federal office holders and candidates, we reverse, is what the ruling says. This is the day before the Colorado primary, so Donald Trump looks like he's good to go in Colorado. Rachel, any surprises here for you?
I think it was surprising that unanimously they all decided that this was wrong.
Right.
I don't know. I didn't necessarily expect that. Now, granted, that doesn't mean all their opinions read the same, right? Because the three liberal judges had a concurring opinion because they think that the conservatives took it too far. This should have been a narrow ruling of simply that states can do this. If there's an insurrectionist on a state level, then they can bar them from being on the ballot. They can't do it on a federal level because of the Constitution. But the conservative judges went as far as to say, like, Congress can make the decisions and they set the standards, and like they went a little bit further with it, kind of like what they did with Roe, which is an issue I think that the liberals made also in their concurring opinion. You can make a decision on this case and not go as far as you did, like with Roe, and completely overturning it. You could just make it specific to what the case is asking for. So unanimously surprised me. The other thing that surprised me is that I think people were wondering, would this case that now is dealing with the insurrection by the Supreme Court, would they address the insurrection? Because on a state level, it was them deeming him an insurrectionist. And that is why they said he can't be on the ballot. That happened all the way up to the state Supreme Court. Right. Other states that were doing it as well had the same theory. They were wondering, will Congress say, not Congress, sorry, will the Supreme Court say Trump's an insurrectionist or not? I think some people were waiting to see if that would be addressed, and they didn't say anything. And some people are saying, well, the fact that they didn't address it is because they know they believe that he is. And then other people are saying they didn't address it because they're scared to, because, you know, they don't want to have to
rule. Or in their opinion, in their ruling, they're saying that it doesn't really matter whether he is or whether he isn't, that they're essentially saying that
they are.
Right. So whether or not it doesn't matter whether he is or he isn't, that it wasn't.
It's not a state issue. It's not a state issue. But because the facts are dealing with January 6th, they thought they might actually address it. And they didn't. They skirted over the whole thing and just dealt with it of this is how we're reading that amendment. This is the interpretation. It's never been used since the 19th century. And so, and then the argument, of course, for the people who brought it on behalf of Colorado were like, because we haven't had a president do this before. There hasn't been a need to use this since then. But they ruled the way that they did. And some people are like, okay, well, the state is allowed to keep presidents off ballots if, like, their paperwork is wrong. So what's the difference of keeping them off the ballot when we're deeming them as an insurrectionist? Kind of thought that was an interesting argument too.
It also calls into question some, it's interesting when you think about the Supreme Court. So you used to look at the Supreme Court as an entity that tried its best. This is years and years and years ago. My opinions on the court are very well known. They tried its best to look at issues with the integrity of the American system at the forefront. At least if you're talking about court and questions like that. The unanimity of the court here is in a way encouraging, but also in a way frightening, right? Because the unanimity of the court here says that even your liberal judges looked at this and they said, this is a precedent we don't want to set. It's bad. And we're interpreting this in a way that is not necessarily about politics, but about how we view the law and how we view the constitutionality of the assertion, right? Which is what you want from the court.
Yes.
What you want from the court is for them to look at things through the lens of the Constitution and through the lens of American freedom. And you would hope that there would be some unanimous decisions on the court, because you would hope that there would be some issues that they could get to that were unanimous. At the same time, a lot of people are going to be afraid that there's been some intellectual capture or some sort of cucking of the three liberal minds on the court because people want so badly for there to be factionism in terms of liberal and conservative thought at all times. So you guys should have, you know, there should be something inside of you that buttresses up against the three, let's face it, the six, let's face it, presumably pro-Trump,
right,
not conservative leaning,
right,
but pro-Trump judges that Supreme Court has, you know, very particularly the three that he appointed. So anyway, so I'm saying is there are people that are going to say, oh my God, the three liberal justices didn't fight against the tide that is building in a lot of these different organizations that Trumpism is taking over. But then there'll be other people that'll say, hey, the fact that they all looked at this and said, you know what? This is not quite the way that this should be interpreted or the way that this should go. Just means that they can agree on something.
Well, I guess I don't even see it. That's true. Mm-hmm. But it's always, it seems to be, at least where we stand now, the last few years, the liberals that have to do that for things to be unanimous. The mm-hmm. other side doesn't seem
they're
to
never
do that
gonna do it.
At all. So, like, it's not really encouraging to me that unanimously they voted because that's the way it always is. The liberals have to come over to the other side. They have to meet. If this had been Biden, you think that these conservatives would have decided the same way?
There have been probably not. There have been some decisions that we've talked about that have gone differently than what we thought they were.
Yes, some of the voting, some of the, like, with Alabama and their redistricting. Mm-hmm. Redistricting, yes. There was another state, same issue. They seem to have said, we're not, you know, like, they didn't go the way that we thought they were going to.
A lot of people looked at that as throwing the people a bone because they knew that the Dobbs decision was going to be so destructive. I mean, a lot of people looked at it that way. A lot of people looked at it as the court trying
like
to save,
too much.
Like the court trying to save face because they knew that they were about to destroy.
You know what? How we'll know? That if they're like, okay, well, not this year, next year.
Yeah.
Because there is another case that's coming up. There's a case in Arkansas, I think right now. That's either Arkansas or Oklahoma, I can't remember, that is dealing with voting right issues. It's going to challenge the act again. So if they were just throwing a bone because they're eventually going to do it, well, no.
Hmm. The central question which you raised still hasn't been answered, and I'm interested in getting more insight into it, which is, by the text and the intent of the 14th Amendment, what's in there about this, is Donald Trump is Donald Trump eligible to run for president? And that question is about getting to the bottom of whether or not Donald Trump's actions on January 6th and around January 6th, before January 6th, because a lot of people talk about January 6th as if it is the only time that Donald right. Trump tried an insurrection. And what I would say is that an insurrection comes in many forms and facets. And it normally, even a coup, right? Even a coup always employs some intellectual sabotage. You think about the coup as fucking 150 tanks in front of the Capitol, and some country somewhere where they speak some different language goes in and they kill everybody. That's the final act of the coup.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, there has to be some type of philosophical and intellectual capture that goes on to make those, to rev those guys up, right? So there has to be propaganda, and there has to be vote rigging, and there has to be power grabs in all of these different places. People have to be inserted. Friendly people have to be inserted into these places. There's always some corruption that leads to the final violent act of the coup, which is the act that snatches power. And I look at January 6th as really the same thing, right? January 6th had been intellectually codified by months and months of planting it into Americans' minds that something happened that didn't happen. So that, to me, was as much of a coup as them running into the state house, all the stuff in Georgia and the fake electors and all of these plots. And I guess that's what was litigated down there in Colorado. And I would wonder what the Supreme Court or anyone who thinks that Donald Trump didn't engage in an insurrection and mm-hmm. wasn't party to an insurrection, I would wonder what they thought about him trying to invalidate or the election and usurp power from a duly and fairly elected president, and how that doesn't meet the standard of an insurrection. I think
it's a very good point.
Yeah.
I just don't think we'll see Congress, and it'll be curious with the immunity case as well. I want to see if they're going to finally address whether or not they deem him as that, whether it's because of January 6th or any of his actions before or after. Mm. I just don't think they ever will.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
I was sent the video by somebody. This is a lieutenant governor. How you say lieutenant? Like Forrest Gump?
Not Lou.
We had a guy at Tech. I don't know if I ever talked to you about him before. He was called the Nasty Lieutenant. Did we ever talk about him?
We did not.
We never talked about the Nasty, Nasty Lou Dog?
How many names does he have?
So it was this guy that played on the football team. And he had been in the Army. But then he left the Army to play on the football team. So he's a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a white guy, country-ass white guy, only dated black women. Only dated black women. And he dated as many black women as he could. And he would call them chocolate babies.
I'm so disturbed.
He was like.
To their faces.
Yeah, he would be like, he'd talk to girls and he'd be like, you know, I like them chocolate babies. And he was getting so many black ladies. We called him the Nasty Lieutenant. The Nasty, Nasty Lou Dog. But it was Lieutenant.
It didn't bother you that he called black women chocolate babies?
Look.
You thought it was funny?
I couldn't be bothered by it because they weren't bothered. I look back at college and I think about the disgustingness of dorm life. I lived in Carruthers at Tech, which was a private dorm.
Okay, so it's nicer.
You would think. But I didn't live in the dorms when I got to Southern. But when I was at Tech, I lived in the private dorms, right? And there was one guy that called himself the Phantom Shitter. And what he would do is just throw shit all over everything. Like, you get on the elevator.
No.
And all of the buttons would be covered.
Oh, my God.
One time, there was this guy.
Do you know who it was?
No, we never found out who it was. Like, there was this guy named Leon. And me and Ryan were getting on the elevator. And Leon was getting off the elevator. And Leon was like, hey! Don't get on the elevator. I was like, I'm gonna ride the elevator. I've been stuck on the elevator. Somebody put shit all over the buttons.
What are y'all out here doing in Louisiana?
This dude would print out he would print out flyers and he would be like, 6 weeks off, but then the Phantom Shitter will return.
That's disgusting. What kind of, I don't know what, you had to get out of there. That's the most nastiest thing I've ever had.
But, so I just remember the idea of a communal shower.
I didn't do a communal shower.
What'd y'all
have? Said it was private. We had bathrooms in our rooms.
Okay, so we had a private dorm. You had a private room, but there still were like, I think, two or three bathrooms per floor with all of these shower stalls. Right? And all of these shower stalls. And we all had our girls in there and stuff like that. So everybody.
Y'all did?
Yeah, we had girls in there the girl would come over. Sometimes my girl at the time would come over and stay 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days.
No, in the showers?
Yeah, they would go use the shower.
Another man would be there?
I would, you stand outside of the shower, you wait for your girl to shower.
Oh, I'm thinking like a big open shower with like three heads.
No. There were individual shower stalls.
I never
stalls.
Had to do this. That's what I thought.
Nah, we weren't all in there showering. Like prison or like after the fucking Super Bowl or something. But like, you were all in there showering and stuff. And you would go in there and you would see the Nasty Lou Dog. And he would have like there would be a pair of white feet, and then he would say a pair of chocolate feet. He's like, you know, when I'm in there, you see a pair of white feet and a pair of chocolate feet. And there will always be different black ladies. And there was sometimes it would be ladies that you would look at them and you would be like, God damn, not you too. A victim of the nasty, nasty Lulu. That's what we would say. Not you. A victim of the nasty. I wonder where he's at right now. That nasty lieutenant.
If anybody knows him, what's his full name?
I can't remember. I'll have to call Ryan. I don't remember the... Hold on, let me see. Ryan never answers the phone when I call him.
Because he knows he's on to you now.
Let me see. Then we can get back to it because this guy's the lieutenant governor. But let me call Ryan real quick. Real quick, you're on the podcast.
Okay.
Do you remember the name of the nasty, nasty Lou dog? The nasty lieutenant?
Oh, I do not.
Tell them who the nasty lieutenant was.
So... So the nasty lieutenant was this crazy white dude that we went to college with, and he believed in hitting every girl he messed with raw.
Raw.
But I thought were they only black?
They were black, yeah.
Yeah. And he just said he trusted his picks.
That was it. That's another reason why what we called him the nasty Lulu. Because he was like, he don't use condoms. He was like, I trust my picks. He was the nasty, nasty Ludo.
I've heard enough.
The nasty, I'm going to hit you back, bro. The nasty lieutenant. That's how he got the name, because he was hitting everybody wrong.
I've heard enough.
Damn. See, Ryan, remember, he was like.
That is so disgusting.
He was in my room, and we was playing 2K. And he was like, 2K on the Dreamcast. We was playing 2K, and he was, I was like, yo, you don't use condoms, bro? Because there was a bowl of condoms that I would have. I'd be like, everybody take some condoms. And he was like, I don't need them. And he was like, what? He's like, I trust my picks. And I'm like, bro, seriously, you should use some condoms. Nasty Lou dog. Anyway, this guy is the lieutenant governor of, it's a slow news.
It's a slow news day.
So this guy, the lieutenant governor of North Carolina, has been serving since 2021. Somebody sent me this video. I can't remember who, but shout out to you. Maybe I should shout you out. Hold on. Let me go. Kyle Farner. Kyle.Farner on, I didn't respond to you, but I took the video. So look, he's a member of the Republican Party. He's the first African American to hold the office of lieutenant governor. He has been likened to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. by Donald Trump. Donald Trump said, this is Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids. Trump said at the pre-Super Tuesday rally in North Carolina. I told to Mark, he said, I think you're better than Martin Luther King. I think you are Martin Luther King Jr. times two. This governor, lieutenant governor, had something to say about the idea of reparations. Ashley, could you run this for us, please?
There are some people that were talking about reparations in this country. They wanted reparations. And I remember I made this particular liberal so angry at me because I told them right to their face, nobody owes you anything for slavery. If you want to tell the truth about it, it is you who owes. It's you who owes. Why do you owe? Because somebody in those fields took stripes for you. Somebody after those fields were ended and slavery was ended. Somebody had to walk through Jim Crow for you. Somebody fought wars and died for you. Somebody lived less than because they didn't have what you have, and they did it for you. There are people in their graves right now, and they are there because they were willing to stand up and fight for you. Those folks on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, carrying American flags, take that, Colin Kaepernick, living in a society that he could scarcely acknowledge, something that he has never known, living with a bigotry that none of us can imagine, carried American flags on that bridge. And when they were hit upside the head with nightsticks and shot with water hoses and knocked to the ground, they got up and picked those flags up and kept marching. And they did it for you. Nobody owes you anything. If anybody owes, it's you, because you've been the benefactor of freedom. You are the one that owes. And what do you owe? You owe it to them to get up off your tail and get to school. And when you get to school, you owe it to them to get up off your tail at school and get to work and get some learning in your head. And once you get that schooling in your head and get out of that school, you owe it to them to get to work. And then when you get to work and you get married, you owe it to them to take care of your children.
So, I do find that fascinating.
The whole speech?
Everything that he said.
even Trump's comments?
No.
Okay.
That is, if I could give people one clip that demonstrates the trick bag of respectability politics, I think that's the purest example ever.
Mm. Okay.
What are your thoughts on it?
No, you keep going.
I think that's one of the best examples ever. Because what you do is you start off with a premise and then you connect it to something that's obviously true. It's obviously true that Black people owe our ancestors. We've talked about this before. We owe our ancestors for every revolutionary act of freedom that they committed.
Right.
We owe our ancestors not just for standing on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. We owe them for getting married. We owe our ancestors not just for rebuilding communities after they were destroyed by white terrorism. We owe them for establishing loving community bonds before that. We owe our ancestors for dancing, for partying, for eating, for loving, for existing. We owe them for everything. We owe them for doing all of that in spite of some of the worst circumstances in human history, some of the worst oppression in human history, some of the worst violence and degradation in human history. Everything that they did was revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear about different people who are revolutionary and everything, you know, they got up and they killed a bunch of people and they got people together. When your dignity is taken from you and your integrity is taken from you, loving is revolutionary, singing is revolutionary, creating is revolutionary, all of that stuff is, right? Defiance of your condition is all of that. So we owe our ancestors so much, we can't even begin to talk
right
about how much we owe them. We then owe intentionally the participants in the civil rights movement, we owe it to them to live full participatory lives in American society, because that's what they were fighting for, right? They were fighting, right. They were fighting for our agency,
mm-hmm,
for our power. We owe them. We definitely owe them. We're talking about two different sets of O here, and he put them all together. He said, you don't owe anything for reparations. You're not owed anything for slavery, right? I want to educate people on reparations. Reparations is not just reparations for slavery. Reparations is not an emotional exercise. I want everybody to know this. Like, nobody's saying that you're owed reparations because you're sad or you're mad about oppression.
Right.
Reparations and the fight for reparations is an intellectual exercise. And it asks, what would it take for African Americans to be full participants in the American economy? What would that take? As a block, as a group, African descendants of slavery here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to trigger a lot of people, but that's who we're talking about, okay? What would it take for them to be full participants in the American economy? And what that would take is very simple. An accounting of what was denied to Black people by both codified, institutionalized, and systemic racism and oppression. The number that Sandy Darity comes up with in the book, From Here to Equality, is $14 trillion. $14 trillion of wealth intentionally removed from the Black community, intentionally taken from us, not just from slavery, but from the money made off of slavery,
mm-hmm,
that we did not get to participate in. Then from land erasure due to contract buying schemes, trickery, all of that type of stuff. Then Jim Crow, and once again, the codified depowerment of Black liberation. Then white terrorism. Hey, go do everything that this guy just said. Everything that the great lieutenant governor said. He says, you owe it to people to do that. I got news for the lieutenant governor and anybody else that sticks their nose in the book. We did that. We went and we learned. We established schools for ourselves. We established homes, communities, hospitals, banks, churches for ourselves. Whole communities for ourselves. And every time we did that, the country that has an almost romantic obsession with our oppression said, nah. Right. We would rather anybody else have it than you niggas have it, because that threatens the way things are supposed to go in America. And they acted. They did. They acted. They acted with urban renewal to destroy communities.
Right.
They acted with terrorism. They acted with laws. They acted with redlining. They acted. They acted. They actually acted to defraud us of our experience as Americans, an experience that we've been trying to earn ever since we got here. So to say, hey, you owe your ancestors, but the country doesn't owe anything, that's something that those ancestors didn't even believe. Because what they were fighting for was what they were owed.
Yeah.
And if you think that we've gotten there because of their contributions, I'm sorry, you're wrong. If you look at Black wealth, if you look at Black life expectancy, if you look at schools, if you look at healthcare, if you look at the prison system, the disparities exist all over the place. Because really, a lot of these questions come back down to cultural and economic circumstances. So as this guy is talking, and he's trying to make white people feel good about themselves by saying that we owe it to ourselves to be better.
Right.
Two things he does. Number one, we've always been better. We've always been better. We've always been good. We've always been better. We've always been good. We've always been better. The trope of the lazy Black that is sitting around waiting for the white man to save him is a lie. And if you don't believe that's a lie, never listen to another fucking word that I say. Turn this podcast off and go somewhere with the rest of your people who have no concept of American history and live in that silo forever. That's just not true. All right? But the reinforcement of that idea and that trope is necessary to make people believe that Black people aren't living up to the standard of their ancestors. We're not only living up to their standard, we're living past their wildest dreams. And we owe it to them to make the wildest of their wildest dreams, which is that one day we would have power and agency in this country to make it make true. This guy right here, this is a masterclass in trick bagging, a masterclass of bootlicking, a masterclass of, please, sir, may I have some more? And there's no way to get around it. You guys, every single point that is made is refutable by the most surface level interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the dumbest of any person that I've ever brought onto this con. Peniel's smarter than me. Everybody that we bring on this podcast is smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
You're smarter.
No, I'm not.
But what I'm saying right now is, if you are at all interested in the condition of Black Americans, there is no way to come away with any other conclusion other than we've been defrauded of major, major, major amounts of American capital.
So well said. And I'm not going to add much to it because you're so right. The only thing I will say is the other obvious thing to me, which is such an issue with this comparison that he's trying to make of, you need to work hard because you need to honor your ancestors because they worked hard and they through harder times. They were slaves.
Mm-hmm.
They were enslaved.
Right.
They weren't working. And like, he acts as if they worked hard. You need to be doing what they do. They had no choice. They were enslaved. It was do this or be killed. Do this or we'll burn you. This will hang you. This will chop off a limb. Like, they had no choice but to be in that situation. Jim Crow laws, he acts too as if, well, they had to fight through Jim Crow laws. They were doing what they had to do, but they were also fighting against it. It's just the fallacy to me of the comparison of, they had it harder than you. You need to honor them by working hard and not taking into consideration what you're saying. We're talking about Jim Crow. We're talking about slavery. How are you not recognizing that these were problems and these were specifically things, systems designed to be against Black people? I don't understand how you can say that and then this and not recognize the two. To me, that's something also that should be pointed out.
I agree
with everything you're saying.
I agree. And what you're also talking about is the almost understandable legacy of those things. I mean, the predictable legacy of all of that, the predictable legacy of all of that stuff, and other stuff as well. Stuff that is that affects poor Blacks and poor whites alike. And a lot of these places that people are talking about that had these great racial uprisings, these uprisings that you're talking about in places like Watts and places like, you know, all over New Jersey and places like Detroit, these things began to happen with more frequency after the economic basis of those places were eroded. So there was job loss there. And when there was job loss there, it was more difficult to ignore the cultural and systemic racism that was going on. It's kind of easier to ignore that stuff when everybody's working. But when those jobs left, the white people that had money, the white people that had access, they suburbanized. And when they went out to the suburbs, all of the issues that were plaguing these societies were left to be dealt with by Black people this country doesn't care about.
Right.
And what I would ask this gentleman or any person who believes this is Black people have shown that they've cared about America. Specifically, we've shown that we specifically want to be Black and want to be American. We want to be American. We want to be American and everything that comes with that. Question, when has America ever showed that it wanted us? And I'm just asking, and when I say that, I don't even mean, because you can show, you know what? You can show that you want somebody in your house by just not asking them to leave. If you just leave them alone, that's enough for them to be like, oh, okay. Like if you go in the gym, I used to go in the gym, sneak in the gym, LSU gym, shoot around. And nobody would say for me to leave. So I would stay there and shoot. But if you come into some place and you're there and somebody says none for you, then you know they don't want you there.
I don't think it's that America doesn't want us. I think America wants us to be a certain, they want us, but they want us to be a certain way.
Then that's not wanting us.
And that, no. They want us to use us, is my point.
No,
I get what you're saying, yeah. But I'm saying, I would go as far as to say, I totally understand you, you're right. I'm just saying, they do want us here, but they want to use us and treat us less than they are. They don't want us on their level. They don't want us to be equal. And for people, because
real quick, I'll say something. I think America wants niggers.
That's what I'm saying.
But they don't want Black people.
This is what I'm saying. And I got a lot of people on my page right now because of the Candace Owen thing. And they're talking about, you know, they're mad I said she was anti-Black. And they're talking about, you know, because
who you got on your page?
Huh?
Who you got on your page?
It didn't start off that way, but now it's getting bigger. And of course, it's like bringing in other people. And a lot of people are talking about this victimhood mentality. Oh, no, Candace, it's not that she's anti-Black. She just doesn't want you to be a victim, which is what I think the lieutenant is trying to show here in his speech. We don't need to be victims anymore. And I get so frustrated with a speech like this or the people in the comments or people big upping a Candace. It doesn't take much to see that our power as Black people, what power we do have is constantly being challenged and constantly trying to be stripped away from us. I just talked about that case. It's probably going to go up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court found that Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana all had these either state legislative maps or congressional maps that literally were designed to not represent the Black population in order to give more white people a vote and power and take away from Black people. This is happening in present day. So when you talk about us being, we're making this up in our mind, or slavery was such a long time ago, or even this man says in his speech, I wasn't a slave. You know, my parents weren't a slave. He says something like that at one point. All of this is trickling down to where at 2024, we're still fighting for our power just for right to vote, the Voting Rights Act established in 1965 already has taken away rights from, I guess we're going to get into this. I'm not sure if we're going to cover this topic, but in 2013, when Shelby
came. Rolled it back, yeah.
Rolled it back.
Some of it.
You can already see that the gap that has happened between voting, between blacks and whites in the last 12 years, if not more. So this, sorry, I'm going on a rant. We're not even where we were before, but I just get sick of the we're not saying we're victims. We're still fighting for equality, equal footing, so we can have the same power that you do in this country.
See, the term victim is interesting in itself, right? So what if I was to tell somebody that the entire border crisis, right, is a weaponization of a victim mentality, which is that your country is, that you are the victim of a horde of people that are trying to usurp your country from you, both culturally and economically, unfairly. That the way to make people vote on the border crisis is to make them believe that they are the active victims of a group of people that want access to America unfairly and unjustly. That's happening to them, right? That every time they use victims to demonstrate how dire the situation is.
Right.
If an undocumented person commits a crime, if undocumented people have to be someplace and they get put up in a hotel, whatever happens, this is money that could have been yours. This is stuff that could have been yours. This is resources that could have been yours. It's a deeper, much more layered conversation to have about how people feel about that. And I get that. But what I'm saying is the only time the victim word is used is when black people are trying to access their power, their rights, and talking about what they are owed, not because they're black, but because they're American citizens. American citizens have certain rights codified for them. And our rights and our participation in this country, it's a special circumstance. But it's a special circumstance only because it's been especially beat up and fucked up. So what we're saying is, hey, I know it's inconvenient for you guys, but this is what was taken. By the way, don't take my word for it. I'm begging you guys. Read scholarship on it. There are people who are much smarter than me that have looked into this. Now, if you're going to tell me right now that reparations are never going to happen, then whatever. But if you're going to tell me that they're not owed or that it's a stupid idea, then I'm going to ask you who you're trying to please. If you're going to tell me right now that it's a dumb idea, that it doesn't make any sense, then I'm going to ask you, well, who's your master? And that's, I mean, and look, this guy's entitled to his opinion, but at the same time, to connect what we owe our ancestors with what America owes us is a clear TB. Trick it back.
I would just say, too, about the victimhood, that's an interesting thing that you said, because they do consider themselves victims when it comes to DEI, when it comes to affirmative action.
They're the biggest victims. All we hear is who didn't get to go to school, who didn't get a job because some lazy black got their job. That's all we hear. But then as soon as we say, hey, we'd like to not be killed by the police, victim! Hey, we'd like to eat decent food, victim! Hey, you know what? They're not letting us buy houses. Oh, fuck it. You know what? Take two twigs, go build the house, nigger. That's what we did. Victim! But they complaining about everything. Like, literally, a trans person can use the bathroom and they go, oh my God, they're taking over. What is left for us people? Us normal Christian whites. But you can't ask me, victim, get the fuck off my dick, man. Fuck y'all. Let's do an apology rating. All right. This is going to be a good one.
Go ahead.
Okay, so Risa Tisa, we didn't talk about it on this podcast, and I don't really know exactly what Risa Tisa did because I didn't watch it.
She just told her story.
She told her story.
Yes.
She told her story, And
about she was wronged by her husband.
She was wronged by her husband. And like 100 million people have watched it.
She's doing the rounds.
She's doing her thing. Risa Tisa.
Tamron Hall. Good morning. Sat down with Robin Roberts.
Sat down with Robin Roberts. Risa Tisa. Go ahead, Risa Tisa. So last week, I guess it was last week, or recently, over on the old Breakfast Club, they talked about Risa Tisa's entire saga.
Right.
And Charlamagne the God had this to say.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I hear a lot of big back behavior. Does she have a big back?
She do give Sheila that was driving up the mountain.
Okay, okay. Yeah, she Sheila did. Was beautiful, though.
Yeah, no. You talked about the big back, not the big face. Back. Yeah, you're right. She's cool.
What's your thing with big back?
No, I'm just saying, because in a situation like this, some of you big backs, y'all got to stop being so thirsty for a man. There's a man out there for you, okay? This woman believed all of this because she wanted to believe all of this. Big back belief? Mm-hmm. Isn't like everybody else's belief, mm-hmm. okay? She said it herself. He mm-hmm. said everything I wanted to hear. Yeah. She wanted to believe whatever was coming out of his mouth because she wanted a man so bad.
And then I seen him and he actually looked like her, but...
Okay, so people were mad mm-hmm. about that.
She was mad. She addressed it specifically on Tamron Hall.
People were very upset. Candace, a friend of mine, Candace Bimbo, she was upset. She was like, she talked about... she very frankly called Charlamagne out. She said that Charlamagne is an advocate for mental health and you can't be both an advocate for mental health
come on.
And somebody who is on the radio talking about
fat shaming.
Fat shaming people. Fat shaming people. You can't do that. Now, by the way, I don't think that's untrue. I think that's probably something that has a lot of weight to it. You, like, I'll be honest with you. My body image and who I am, I'm a very confident guy. My body image, and it's a part of me. Mm-hmm. And it fucking sucks. It's a thing. They say so many different things about the way you actually look. But I guarantee somebody something. And everybody's going through this to a degree. I'm about to get on the whole soapbox. But like, if you're looking in the mirror, and you can't see how, I used to take showers with the lights off. You know, I'm just being for real.
No, I mean,
at my biggest, I used to take showers with the lights off. I used to cut the light off when I would take the shower. So I wouldn't have to catch a glimpse of myself naked because it would ruin my day.
Does this bother you?
He shouldn't have said it.
Cause like what
he should, but not only should he shouldn't have said it. Let me be honest with you. It was a fucked up thing to say. So what I'm thinking, he hadn't even seen her at this point, according to him.
That's bullshit. So
wait a second. I'm not even gonna get into the whole thing. I get it. What you're saying. All right. So, and I've talked to Charlamagne. I knew that this apology was coming.
But it wasn't an apology, so it's a zero. Just okay. In case you guys don't know.
Wait. We have to give them the apology first, Rachel. We have to give them the apology first. All right. Okay, all right. So Risa Tisa, after this, she then went on Tamron Hall, and on Tamron Hall, she mentioned the fact that Charlamagne called her a big back,
and she didn't call him by name, by the way.
She didn't call him by name, but everybody knew who she was talking about. So I think today on the Breakfast Club, Charlamagne issued this apology. Ashley, play the apology.
Tell y'all all the time, the easiest way to keep your own peace is to not disturb the peace of others. Mm-hmm. I disturbed that woman's peace, and that wasn't my intention. So I apologize if my words made her feel that way. But I do have two things to say. Mm. Number one, I never said she don't deserve love because of her size.
Right.
I didn't even know she was big. Just told the story, mm-hmm. and I said it sounds like big back behavior, and mm-hmm. then I started talking about big back belief. Now, if y'all want to have a conversation about reinforcing negative stereotypes of big backs, I understand. Mm-hmm. I'm open to it. But acting like I was having a conversation about Risa Tisa's looks and size, that's not accurate. I was speaking in general terms about big back behavior and big back belief. And I actually said nobody has to be that desperate because there is a man out there for you. Mm-hmm. And I do have one final point, just one. We all have social media.
Absolutely.
And we all use it for different reasons.
Yeah.
And Risa's getting a lot of props for being so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Salute to her. But I personally feel like we have to stop bringing this stuff to social media.
Yeah.
If you don't. people to have an opinion about.
Absolutely.
Because some of this stuff should just be reserved for our therapists. If we can't handle people having an opinion about whatever we are venting about, keep it off social media. That's my personal
opinion. That's a good point. When you put it out there in the world, the world's going to come back many different ways.
Thank absolutely. Yeah, and she said that she was already insecure about her weight. So then that why would you come to such a big, big, big platform thinking that, you know, you're going to be off limits from comments, like, because it's people who was actually going in.
Absolutely.
On her.
Absolutely.
You didn't call her a big back.
No, I was just speaking towards big back behavior and big back belief based off the story you told.
Absolutely.
And that's why even when you referenced Sheila, you referenced Sheila from Why Did I Get Married?
Yes.
Fantastic movie, because even that movie reinforced those same stereotypes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And we also seen where Sheila ate small.
She unbigged her back. She didn't unbig her back. She definitely did.
And then that man came around. You know what I'm saying?
He was going crazy.
Wanted her, and then the skinny girl, she was spending up the money and all that. So it just all of that to say, like you said, just get therapy for it, especially if it is an insecurity of yours.
Yeah, but I just don't think those are things that should be on social media, because everybody's not going to agree with you.
Nope.
There's going to be people that have negative things to say. So I just feel like some of this stuff should be reserved for our therapists if we can't handle people having an opinion about whatever we are venting about. Because you're not always going to hear what you want to hear.
Yeah, and then to say, especially the more famous personality. It should hurt you when anybody say.
I get it, but I respect. I understand that, though. And once again, if I disturbed her peace, I apologize for disturbing her peace, but that was not my intention.
Well, that was very big of you to apologize, and I love you for that, bro.
I love you, too.
So, first of all, what's the apology rating?
Zero.
It says zero.
He started off, because here's the thing. He said, I don't like when people say, just say you're sorry. If you mean it, you're sorry. He said he disturbed her peace, and he goes, and I'm sorry if she took it that way. That wasn't my intention. My question immediately is, so what was your intention? I would have loved to have known. This is where I need his co-host to not co-sign and be a sounding board or a choir behind him. Actually say, what was your intention? Because that's what I want to know. Because it seems like you were trying to be funny at the expense of bigger people. That's what it feels like. Big back behavior. Sounds like big back. Kept saying it over and over again. He said it. It feels like he said it for laughs. I don't know his intention because nobody asked. And it feels like he was trying to make a joke, you know, on the backs of bigger people. That's, I don't like that. Then he goes on to when he says, but, and basically says without saying, if you're going to be sensitive, then don't get on social media. Because when you put yourself out there, and Jess goes on to elaborate even more, when you put yourself out there, then people have the right to scrutinize you. But does that make your behavior okay?
Yeah.
That's the problem. You're right. We're public figures. You say an opinion. People have the right to disagree, to agree, to come at you. We see it all the time. You see the good, the bad, and the ugly. But that doesn't excuse or make your behavior okay just because it's out there for everybody to critique. You're wrong. You fat shamed her. Your co-host fat shamed her. And then you tried to excuse it and make it her fault because she just wanted to get on and tell her story. For her reason to be vulnerable, maybe other women were going through this. She has the right to do that. That doesn't, and you have the right to criticize, but you also then need to understand that it can be deemed as wrong, which it is. So the but is why I'm giving it a zero.
Zero. All right. So this is what I'll say. Number one, it would be hypocritical of me to get on here and act like I'm the best apologizer in the world. You guys have heard some of my apologies. I'm a work in progress in terms of apologies. I will say this, and here's the reality. If we're working towards the healing and betterment of people, then, and that's really true, that's a full-time job. You don't take plays off. If that's what it's really about, that's a full-time job. Nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. I know for sure that it was something that was bothering them. You know what I mean? Because I don't think he thought it was going to be this big of a deal, honestly. I think just fucking around and the jokes went too far, or he didn't really think about it. But I'll say this. I'll say that, like, the intentionality of this entire thing can't be on the back end. It has to be on the person with the biggest microphone. The intentionality has to be to not do harm. Yeah, people are going to be harmed. People being harmed is no excuse in and of itself for harm. See what I'm saying? Like, people are going to be harmed. That you can make that about anything. People are going to be harmed. And people are going to sometimes expose themselves to harm.
Right.
But that's no excuse for harm.
Exactly.
And so what I would say to that is, yeah, man, if you want to put your kids on, if you want to put a family vacation with your kids on your Instagram, does that give people the right to call your kids ugly?
Well, according to their logic, it does.
I would say no.
According to their logic, it does.
You know what I'm saying? I would say no. So I think that, and look, it's difficult sometimes. Once again, I'm being honest. It's difficult sometimes even for me. You guys have heard my apologies. Let's keep it all real. Y'all know what's up. For me to come on here and just be like, I'm sorry. I made somebody feel bad. I didn't want to make them feel bad. But then there's another part of it that's tough too. The other part of it that's tough is to say, I will be better at this the next time. Because that means that you're not going to hold yourself to a standard.
Yeah.
And look, I wouldn't be me if I didn't say that particular person has come leaps and bounds. Like Charlamagne has come leaps and bounds in terms of therapy, in terms of working and doing all of that stuff. Sorry, guys. I know you guys are not going to want to hear it. God's my fucking
friend.
It's
not that. We just don't need to hear it right now.
Yeah, but
we know he's your friend.
No, but I would expect you to do the same thing if somebody was talking about me. And yeah, I would do the same. Hey, right. And I would do the same thing if somebody was talking about you.
But can I just say this? Go ahead.
All I'm saying is the work that you've already done, it doesn't stop. You got to keep pushing forward to do more work. Everybody. I owe that to myself. He owes that to himself and to our audiences. And I think everybody does as well.
This response made it worse. I'm sorry. It really did. And I also just find the timing to be so interesting because Jess constantly talks about the way people look. Like that there've been multiple times where she's been in hot water.
She's a comedian now.
I get that, but
you know what I mean? So like,
I'm not talking about when she's on the stage being a comedian. I'm not talking about a while and out situation. I'm just saying, and the reason I'm talking about the timing is because it's interesting that her interview on The Pivot just came out and her biggest regret is criticizing somebody's appearance, not knowing they were dying. Yeah. Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
And now it's just this, I'm saying the timing is very interesting. This isn't talking about her comedic act. I actually find her to be very funny. I'm just saying maybe you should think about that. Her biggest regret comes from making fun of the way somebody looked who was dying. What if she took this? What if Restisa and something bad happened because of people with have a bigger platform are talking about the way that she looks in an indirect way, not just her weight, but also her face.
Yeah, I think
just
so,
something to consider.
No, I get it. So for me, I think this is the only thing I would say is that you can't have it both ways, right? If you're going to be a person that gets your jokes off no matter what, fuck it. Be that. Just be that. Be the person get you. Because there has to be somebody like that. Let's be for real. There has to be somebody that gets their fucking jokes off and just does their shit and fuck it to be damned. Whoever fucking cares. I don't fucking care about what anybody says. I'm here for the comedy. I'm here for the funny. Most of the times it's going to go right. Sometimes it's going to go wrong. We all can't be in the same bag. We all shouldn't be in the same bag of even sensitivity. Somebody to me has to be the person who doesn't give a fuck. I believe that person has to.
I understand that.
But what I'm saying is this. If you claim to give a fuck, if you are going to give a fuck, there's something that comes with that. And there's something that's coming with that is going to be people holding you to either a higher standard or the standard that they say that you hold yourself to. And you're opening that criticism up. You're opening yourself up for that criticism when you say that you care. If you say that you care about people's mental health, if you say that you care about people's good, if you say that you care about people's well-being and you care about all of these things, people are going to expect you to act commiserately. And I think that that's the thing right there. But there's plenty of people out there that like, hey, you fat, you ugly, you this, you that. They don't give a fuck. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you're going to get mad, sometimes you're going to laugh. I don't know where Jess stands in that. I don't know where she stands in that. I do know that I typically give comedians a little bit more leeway about the shit that they say. Sometimes they even say shit about people.
But they weren't, and this response was not comedic work.
I know, but what I'm saying
that's
is this,
what I'm
though.
That's what she's saying is not being is not comedic work.
Not to belabor this, and I just think intellectually this is a little bit more interesting. Not to belabor this, right? You can talk about, this is all based upon who the person is as well, right? Like whether or not you can talk about this. I took it personally. I take it personally whenever somebody talks about bigger people. I am a bigger person. I've been smaller. I've been in great shape. I'm losing weight. I'm doing good. But I've been a bigger person. I take it personally, right? But I also don't take it personally when somebody talks about like a Mitch McConnell or says that he looks like a fucking worm or when somebody talks about Tim Scott's teeth. What about the worm-looking people and the people that got toothless? Like those people, I'm sure, feel in a certain way whenever those things get... So I'm just thinking... Like, there's a lot to this. I think it's a conversation about how you want to see, how you want to be seen and how you want to see yourself. But I don't think there are going to be very many people who are happy with that apology.
It wasn't because it wasn't one. Especially when the woman is saying how wrong she was done. Her whole story is devastating. I mean, I heard it all, but like the pieces I've heard. So then you're just building on that.
And by
Let's
the way,
keep kicking her while she's down.
And by the way, I will say something else. Just intellectually, it doesn't make any sense. If I watched the movie The Tinder Swindler.
Oh yeah, sir.
None of them women have big backs. None of them women, like none of them, I watched the Tinder Swindler, all of those women were conventionally attractive.
I would love to know what big back behavior means.
I know what it means for me.
What does it mean for you?
Nigga, check me out real quick. A couple of days ago, because, you know, I let it go a little bit looser on the weekends. So I boxed, right? So let me tell you what happened. I woke up, I lifted weights with Joel. Shout out to Joel over at Equinox. And then I boxed. I lifted weights and then I went to the Valley and boxed, right? Nice. And I ran 3 miles.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? I was into my shit.
Actively black.
My whole fucking body is sore, even right now. So I did all of those things, right? Later on, man, I had like a 2,500 calorie burn on the Fitbit.
Wow.
I did 2,500 yesterday, not the Fitbit, on the thing. Let me see what I burned. I did 2,500 on Saturday. And then I did like 1,900 on Sunday. Because Sunday I woke up, I went on the treadmill, I ran 3.5, right? And then I went down and I hooped. So I was doing my thing. But see, Saturday night, Ben and Jerry's chocolate topped caramel sundae ice cream, boom, big back. Sat down, Bozeman was looking at me like, Dad, can I have some? I'm like, nah, not this boy's chocolate. Bang, 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 bang. Before you knew it, you heard that little sound of the spoon scraping the cardboard down the whole pint. Gave the whole day back. That's big back. Gave the whole day back. And one little thing. Had done that was really the only thing I ate all day was that and some boiled eggs because the smegletude's kicking my ass. But gave the whole day back. That's the behavior I'm talking about.
I could do that.
No regrets. Don't regret a thing.
I could do that.
But all I'm saying is, like, let's be honest. You know, this is, like, it's not about that. I think it's unfair to say that bigger people are more desperate for love. Everybody's desperate for love.
It's the whole thing.
Everybody gets so taken advantage of. You know what I'm saying?
I hate the whole thing.
All right. Talk a little sports real quick. Real quick. I just fuck all of the backstory. The backstory is that in 2005, the Heisman Committee, the NCAA, they took Reggie Bush's Heisman, right? If you guys didn't know, Reggie Bush, one of the most electric college athletes of all time.
I think it's a little karma, maybe, because Vince should have won it that year.
Vince shouldn't have won that year.
Vince wouldn't have his trophy taken.
Vince shouldn't have won that year. Vince was the best player on the field when USC played Texas, without a doubt. He was the best player on the field, but the best player in college football that year was Reggie Bush.
Same.
Okay. But Reggie Bush was found to have taken all kinds of improper benefits, right? USC was banned for postseason play for 2 years. They were docked 30 scholarships and vacated 14 wins, including their 2004 BCS National Championship. Reggie Bush's Heisman was taken from him when his family received impermissible extra benefits. The Heisman Trust said that they would restore Reggie Bush's Heisman if the NCAA reinstated him. Okay? Reggie Bush said this about this. It's my strong belief that I won the Heisman Trophy solely due to my hard work and dedication on the football field. It's also my firm belief that my record should be reinstated. Bush said this in 2021. The day the NCAA announced it would allow its athletes to earn income via the name using like the name, image, and likeness. So
apply the law retroactively?
Retroactively to Reggie Bush. Okay. He sued in 2023, defamation case, saying that the government body's 2021 statement that he had a pay-for-play arrangement with USC was false. So it basically said that he was getting paid to play football. Reggie says, not true, he fought. That's not true, he sued him. Johnny Manziel says he is out with the Heisman Trophy.
The ceremony.
Ceremony. Until Reggie Bush gets his Heisman back. He says, after careful thought and consideration, I will humbly be removing myself from the Heisman Trophy ceremony until Reggie Bush gets his trophy back. Doesn't sit right with my morals and values that he can't be on that stage with us every year. Reggie is the Heisman Trophy. Rachel, do you think that Reggie Bush...
It's a lot, Johnny.
...should be given his Heisman back?
No. And I'm not biased by any means.
This is a Texas thing.
I'm not biased. I do disagree with the votes that year, but that's not it. He won the Heisman. We know that. We recognize that, even if the NCAA and the Heisman Trust doesn't. But to retroactively apply that law doesn't make sense. Or have other people been reinstated for, I guess this
they
is...
They retroactively took his Heisman.
No, not necessarily.
What are you talking about? Yes, they did.
Well, when did the acts happen? It's like not that they retroactively...
After he won it?
No, they didn't. They happened before. They happened that year.
No, they
When he got the money? No, I'm saying
when did the acts happen is what you're saying.
Yes, when did he receive the cash? When did he receive the money for his parents? That happened in that year.
Right.
So that, it happened then. They discovered it, made the decision afterwards, but the act happened in 2005.
Right, so they...
Or before.
So what I'm saying is...
So that wasn't retroactive. They didn't retroactively do that.
Well, they did it after it happened.
Okay, but that's not retroactively applying it. They found
out... I see what you're saying.
Yes, the act happened during...
And they found out about
it. If it had happened afterwards, I would totally understand your point. Mm-hmm. If they're punishing him for something else, that's different to me. So to me, it doesn't make sense for them to say, hey, well, now we're allowing this to happen with our student athletes. So let's go back and look at every time a college or a coach or an athlete did something that violated this rule, because now it doesn't exist. So let's go actively back and let's give people back their wins, because it wouldn't stop here, right? You got to give the team back their wins. Are we going to go back and look at what happened to SMU? Are we going to go back like that? To me, that's what you would have to do. It wouldn't have to stop with Reggie. So it doesn't make sense to go back and look at every single case.
Who cares?
You broke
the
rule.
Catch your question. Yeah. Who cares?
Johnny Manziel.
Well, no, I'm saying is who cares if he gets this? What I'm saying is, Why do you care if they go back and look at every case and go,
no,
we
I'm just,
wrong,
I don't care. I'm saying that that's what back. Would have to happen.
Right.
It can't be a one-off. And are they going to really go back and do that? So everybody's going to file some type of...
Okay, how about this? Everybody gets... Tomorrow the NCAA wakes up, everybody gets their wins.
Okay,
back.
Great.
What changes?
Nothing, but that wasn't your question to
I know,
me.
But what I'm saying is, you're saying it's a non-starter because they would have to do that.
They would have to do that with everybody.
Okay, so why? Why not? Why not do it with everybody?
They can do it with everybody, but your question to me, and I don't care. Your question to me, though, was, should it happen? And I'm like, well, then you got to go back. That's just not how things work necessarily. That was the law then. This is the law now. Moving forward, this is what applies.
Right. So do you have a problem with Reggie Bush not having the Heisman Trophy?
I don't care.
Seems like you care.
No, this is a topic you wanted to talk about, so I'm forced to care about it in this moment.
You've said this before. You're hard on college athletes.
He got the votes. I understand I'm hard on college athletes. He got the vote. Mm-hmm. So in his heart.
In his heart.
He should know. he won the Heisman. It's not like they took it back and gave it to the second place person.
Yeah.
That I could see stinging a little bit more.
But what about the fact that it's bullshit, right? What about the fact that...
For sure.
What about the fact that taking this Heisman Trophy in the first place is bullshit?
This rule, that name, image, and likeness should have always been applied to student-athletes.
So let's give him his Heisman back.
So to give him his Heisman, fine. But I don't... But if you're asking me about the law, no. But NIL always should have been a thing for athletes.
How does life change if Reggie Bush gets his Heisman back?
Nothing. If that's how you have presented it to me, and said, does anything change? Do you really care? I would have answered it just like that. Have a dog in the fight. Don't care at all.
Where did this young finish in the Heisman voting?
Second.
He finished second? Let's see how close it was.
They weren't close. I can tell you that right now.
But it's really because of Vince Young, right?
No, it just doesn't make sense to go, now we're going to go back and correct it all.
Can I ask you a question? According to Dylon, who are the 5 hottest rappers in the world?
Dylon.
Do you want to hear something interesting?
Yeah.
Dylon says, this just popped up. I want to play this for you. This is called a Rachel surprise. Okay. A Rachel surprise ceremony. I want to hear if you think this makes sense. All right. So Ashley, I want you to play this.
Dave Chappelle said, the top 5 rappers are Dylon. Well, well experienced. I never said that. Now, again, we could talk about the joke all day, but this is We Are Flatbush.
That's a fact.
And I gave you my history.
That's a fact.
So let's talk for real. When they did that, again, all the people that he made fun of, he made the quote, or when comedians do these jokes, they say something that you said, and then they bust it and put it in their own way.
They remix it.
But this is something that I didn't say at all. So I have no control over this. You said I'm top 5 rappers. You said I spit hot fire. And I'm over here as a kid saying, what are they talking about? Not only that, but right after, anytime I send my music to DJs, they say, oh, that's the nigga that David Chappelle made fun of. Now I'm good on that. Not only that, but every promoter says, nah, we're not booking him. So now I have a newborn and the fridge is empty. In 2005, I'm empty. No one is calling me. Everyone is laughing. I'm legend now. Now I'm legend. I'm fucked up for what you just did. And you're not answering the phone. No one is answering the phone. So everybody said, oh, you're boss now, man. You've gone through, man. You make it. How? When at that time, no one picking up their phone, not a one label. And at that time, you had to sign to a record label, not one label. And I know all of them, so I'm calling them direct. And they're like, I can't help you. That joke, gone by. That joke took over.
That joke burned your career.
The joke actually burned it. At that time, I couldn't do nothing.
You can stop it now, Ashley.
He's always had a lot to say.
So Dylon says, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier because it just popped up on my thing. Dylon says that joke ruined his career. What do you think? Rachel's thoughts or Rachel's surprise?
I mean, that's sad to hear. The fact that he had a newborn and he couldn't put food on the table, like that's devastating. I don't know if you can solely blame that skit. I would have thought that skit would make you more popular because it was such a big deal. I didn't realize that it made him a joke. I actually loved Dylon on Making the Band. I thought he was really talented. But I thought it would give him more shine rather than him being the butt of the joke and nobody took him seriously in his rap career after that. I didn't realize it would have that effect. So obviously that's really sad to hear.
I would like to do a whole show based around shit like that, that opened up an untold hell for someone. Because
I literally pitched this.
Oh, for real?
We'll talk off.
Okay.
Because you like to say your ideas. I'm like, we'll talk deeper.
Right. Like, because when I watched that, I felt bad. Because the dialogue, everybody knows that. But everyone was laughing at essentially this, the end of this guy's career. Or I guess for that time, he's saying. That's fucked up.
I think I just thought, and this is sad too, none of them popped. After, like, popped off after. Like, the band didn't make it. Individually, they didn't. So I just thought that that was the case. I guess I didn't look at it as this particular incident affected you. I just thought, we never really saw any of them do it much after
that. Well, what he was saying was that he was getting the direct feedback that people were.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no, I know. Joke. Like, he could have. Otherwise, if that hadn't happened, he would have.
Maybe he'd have been okay.
Maybe.
That's a sad situation.
He really was talented, though.
Dylan's great.
Is
Dylan? I used to love listening to Kick His Dance Hall Style.
I gotta tell you, I just made this comment somewhere else. Making the band, we'll take Diddy out of it for a second. Amazing.
Yeah.
Every season of Making the Band, I wish they could bring it back. You can't do TV like that anymore. It'll never happen again. I was addicted to that series.
So I think the making of the band thing is a better, I think it's an example, because even the Dylan thing, I think it's an example of why it's really hard to make a star coming off of a show like that. So think about this. American Idol, American Idol has a bunch of stars. And that's because it's basically about the singing. You get a little bit of somebody's sob story. You know what I mean? They sing and they go, you know, I started singing when I broke my foot in 1996. And I couldn't move. I'm walking around. I couldn't move. I got broken bones inside of my foot. I don't know what to do. The only thing that moved me was, excuse me. The only way I could move was through the spirit of the notes that I could create. I was in the bed. And I couldn't do anything. And the only thing I could do was sing. So now when I sing about the time that I broke my foot. It just takes me back to that moment. And it means so, so much to me.
And that quivering lip was good.
And like that, it's Kerry Washington. And every time you every time you think of one of those shows, you think about that. But the difference with that, with the band, is that you got to decide who you liked and who you didn't. And that's normally something that you're supposed to do second in terms of fame.
You're right.
The first thing you're supposed to do in fame is like the song or like the movie. And the second thing you're supposed to do after that is decide whether or not you like the person. If you decide whether or not you like the person first, they will never be as famous as they're supposed to be. Ever. Like, because you just know too much. You know too much. The first thing that somebody hits you with should almost always be their product. Oh, I love that song, because the song is much easier to like than the person is.
Mm-hmm.
The song is a lot easier. So you like the song, and then you find out that the person is shitty. Like, oh my God, you like the song. But if you find out that somebody acts a certain way that you don't like, or somebody is lazy, or somebody don't want to come to the studio, or somebody don't want to do all of that stuff, when the music comes out, it's not the same. So that's why those shows inherently were always behind the eight ball. And so people got Dylan's, his personality.
He was my favorite.
I never thought he was like, I mean, he had a high opinion of himself. But
he
Yeah. But and so then Dave Chappelle lampooned that. And then that got led with it when it was time for Dylan to do his thing. Very sad.
We should have Dylan on.
I would love to have Dylan on. Man, it's time. This is why social media is a pariah on society. But one thing that's really good about social media is that Dylan gets to tell his story. And now, I would love to hear the new Dylan record.
Love.
Man, hold on for a second. Let me see what Dylan got out real quick. You know what? We about to get out of here. Let's see what Dylan put out. How do you put it in?
Because the thing about Dylan too is it was spelled Dylan.
Yeah. Let's see, take us out on some Dylan. Dylan. And whenever you put it up, the Chappelle Show skits, the only thing that pops up is like literally the Chappelle Show, the Chappelle Show skit is the only thing that pops up. Dylan rapper music. You can't even find his music real quick. Let me see. I mean, there's nothing on YouTube about this. Oh, here it is. Oh, here it is. Expert put in work. Style and Dilly. Come on. Give me a minute. I see the bad mind and see them through my dark eyes. I will never stop and could never get conquered. No way. The jealousy arise when you're making money. Yeah. They really try to stop me, but I wish them all. See, that sound good.
I always liked them.
That sound good.
I'm looking up now an article where are they now?
That actually sounds good. All the best. Wish them all. Dylan Dilly. He has 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. We're out of here. Take the caps off. Do not stop learning. I'm Van Latham Jr.
And I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay. Bye, guys.